When you see two talented guys just competing, it's fun to see. And I know you guys touched on it. You know, we drafted them early, super early in the draft. And I say that is, I think just because we drafted a quarterback super early doesn't mean you have to push him in there and play. Because I was drafted 24th overall as offensive lineman, and I didn't end up starting until week four. And I was in and out of lineup my rookie year. So I think it's about development. It's about, like, you know, who you see fit right now.
That is Cesar Ruiz, guard for the New Orleans Saints, on their quarterback situation. Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today. Nate is in ahead of his trip to Pinehurst in a couple of days.
Get me going.
We're going through the Bills schedule this week. Talk some Ravens. We talked a lot about the division, so we did decide to skip over the Jets and the Dolphins for now. But we'll have more conversations about them, of course. Week four, the Bills will host the New Orleans Saints, one of their only Sunday 1 o'clock games of the year, which we know Bills fans love. Ross Jackson, Locked On Saints, does a lot down there in New Orleans, is joining us now on the Wester Hotline. Ross, thanks for taking some time out to join us today.
Hey, guys. Good morning. No problem. Thanks for having me.
So, expectation. By the way, actually, before we even start this conversation, Tyler Shuck, or, well, how are we pronouncing the last name now?
Yep, Shuck, like Shuck in an oyster.
All right. That's kind of where I feel like you got to start with the Saints. So when week four arrives, what are the odds for you that he'll be the Saints quarterback? That would be, I'm sure, the start of the year. Is there really any sort of competition with him being a second-round rookie, given that there isn't like a long-time veteran on the roster?
Yeah, look, I think very much that, you know, Spencer Rattler is the more ready prospect between the two. Obviously, Spencer has had a good, you know, six games of starting experience last year and everything, and he's, you know, seen more time in the NFL. And if I'm going to throw a guy to the NFL Wolves, if you will, I want him to at least have seen the game before. But even though he's, in my opinion, the better option right now, I think the Saints are going to go to Tyler Shuck pretty soon. I've been pretty convinced that Tyler Shuck is going to be their week one starter, and that they're going to give him the opportunity. He's the highest drafted quarterback in the franchise's history since 1971, when they drafted Archie Manning in the first round. He's the first ever second round quarterback that they've selected in their team's history. And he was handpicked by the new head coach, Kellen Moore. And I think for all of those reasons, you're going to probably see Tyler Shuck pretty early, is my expectation. The question is, how long of a leash will he have? And, you know, how long are they going to be willing to be patient without turning things over to Spencer Rattler if things don't work out pretty quickly?
That fact that you just read there, that they have not drafted a quarterback higher than him since 1971. I mean, a lot of that is Drew Brees, right? Like, he takes away a decade of that. Before that, though, what were the Saints? No shots on quarterbacks ever in the 20, 30 years before Brees?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they were rolling with guys like Archie. I mean, they had Archie Manning that they turned to. They acquired Aaron Brooks in a different way. That's acquired Bobby Hebert. You know, so it was kind of different ways they went about, you know, grabbing these players and everything. And so it just kind of worked out for him. Even Dave Wilson was a guy that they took in the supplemental draft as opposed to the NFL draft and everything. And so, like, they just kind of always went this route. And then, you know, the Drew Brees era of it all was a, you know, free agent addition, and then they moved on from there, continuously taking swings at free agents. Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, you know, Derek Carr most recently, all that. So this is really the first time that they have gone to the draft to try to find a bona fide starting quarterback.
So on Carr, just to rewind here for a moment, how out of the blue was his retirement? And I don't know, I don't know if there's any, like, hardcore NFL fans that, like, love Derek Carr. I mean, he's been a good quarterback, four-time Pro Bowler. Do you feel like he's definitely done for his career? Could this be one of those, he's out for a year, he's out for 2 years, and then maybe there's a comeback?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see a comeback. He does seem pretty convinced that he's done, though, and I think that happens. Like, it's one thing to retire. It's another thing to retire when your kids are still at home and, you know, being able to actually spend time with them and throw football with them and all the other things. And so I think that that's a different category too. And so maybe that ends up kind of, you know, convincing him to, you know, fully embrace the retirement. But, you know, for a player like him, I have a hard time seeing it until I see it. You know what I mean? And so I'll be interested to see if he tries to make a comeback in 26 or something like that. But the retirement part of it was really shocking. I think though, that we all knew that there was no path forward between the Saints and Carr, and that in some way or another, 2025, he wasn't going to be on the roster. It was the retirement part that was the shock, and then it was the also giving $30 million back off of that retirement that was also a shock. Because I'll tell you, getting to work with Derek Carr over the course of the past couple of years, he's a nice guy. But I didn't think anybody was $30 million nice. That's a very different category of nice, you know what I mean? And so I don't know what exactly went on there, but I think those two things were the biggest surprise out of all of it. But the departure in one way or another was sort of expected.
Ross Jackson with us on the Western Hotline, Locked On Saints. On quarterback, while we're on it still, if it is Shuck right away, how good could it go, I guess? Like, what would the range of outcomes be for you on how maybe what the ceiling could be for him as a rookie, and then also how poorly it could go?
Yeah, I mean, it's the NFL, so things can go extremely well and things can go extremely poorly. You don't know. And so I think no matter what, it goes poorly in Buffalo, I'll say that much. But I think that a big thing for this team is going to be how good is its defense and how good is its run game. Anytime that you have that young starting quarterback, particularly a rookie starting quarterback, you want both of those things churning on as many cylinders as you have available. The question is, how many cylinders does this New Orleans Saints team actually have available is the big question mark for me. And so I think that the ceiling is really him, at least that early in the season, being a game manager, operating the offense, and being able to do so in a way that creates, good rhythm, and he's making good decisions. He's giving competent play while the defense and the run game are, giving the most in terms of what it is that's necessary to compete early on in the season like that. But the worst case scenario is that he goes out there and he looks lost. I mean, look, the biggest thing that you're worried about when it comes to Tyler Shuck from a play perspective is how does he handle himself under pressure? He didn't do that very well in college. And so how is he going to do that at the NFL level, going up against NFL defensive linemen and the NFL speed of defenses? And I think those are going to be the biggest question marks. So I think that the worst case scenario there is that that's where he fails. The best case scenario is that he succeeds there and then manages an offense that can be successful and benefits from its defense.
I think the other thing, too, that's important for rookie quarterbacks or young quarterbacks is having reliable pass catchers. And like you saw after Josh Allen's rookie year, the Bills make a big investment, go out and trade a first-round pick, get Stephon Diggs. Well, the Saints right now have, I think, a really interesting situation, especially when you consider, Chris Olave, the way I think a lot of people view him across the league. He was kind of a hot name when the offseason started as a potential trade target for teams. But I think it was obvious early on that New Orleans intended to keep him. And, we know the injury history and the concussions and everything that kind of goes along with what a great player on the field he is. How much is his ability to stay healthy this year maybe also going to lend to whether or not Tyler Shuck is an NFL worthy quarterback and can remain as the starter all year? And maybe have a conversation about him getting that second year. Like, how much of that maybe hinges on how healthy Chris Olave is this year and moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's the focal point of the passing game, so it would be incredibly helpful for that to be the case, and it would mean, it would mean an entire difference in terms of category for Tyler Shuck and what that offense has the opportunity to be if Chris Olave is, healthy. It's part of those cylinders like we were talking about, right? You're either if you're a six-cylinder car with or a six-cylinder truck with Chris Olave, you're four cylinders without him. You know what I mean? And so your ceiling is just simply capped at that point. And so I think that wide receiver is definitely a place where I think the Saints will invest a lot more in 2026, much like how Buffalo invested, like you mentioned there. And I think that the other two players that are going to be most important in that category too are going to be Alvin Kamara, by giving him sort of that outlet that can turn, those kind of dump offs into big plays, as well as Juwan Johnson, the starting tight end, who's going to have to be the guy that's operating close to the line of scrimmage, making tough catches, and kind of providing that sort of safety blanket, safety outlet, if you will. I think all three of those guys are going to be really important, but I think obviously the Chris Olave piece to it changes what the floor and ceiling can be for this entire passing offense.
Brandon Cooks, too, they brought him back, veteran receiver that'll be in that room as well. Where are the Saints? Ross Jackson with us, Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Saints. Where are the Saints in the whole cap jail conversation? I feel like there have been a lot of times where they're a team that's often mentioned as they do contracts a different way, kind of like how the Eagles do it, right? Like how they structure their deals. And I feel like I've always heard it referenced like, well, the Saints are in cap jail. Like that could be a consequence of doing contracts like this. But then I look and see that they've got room right now. So are they kind of out of that, or are they on their way out of that into, you know, years down the road where they'll be able to add around a young quarterback?
Yeah, I'd say they're on their way out of it. I think they'll still start the 2026 season over the salary cap, but we're not talking, you know, $50 to $111 million over the salary cap like they have been in the past. This is a team that doesn't mind, you know, having dead money because they borrow from future years by restructuring contracts and swinging money through and all these other things. But what will happen next year, as they sit currently around $50 to $60 million over the salary cap for 2026, is, or actually really that was the case, and then that $30 million set in, so they're around $20 to $30 million over the salary cap for next year. And right now they have about $26, $25 million that they can try to hold on to as much of that as they can going into coming out of 2025, which will allow them to roll that money over to 2026. And so that'll put them in pretty close to what I would call their healthiest salary cap situation in a really, really long time is where they'll be. But they won't be clear of the woods just yet. They'll have some contracts that'll end next year that will accelerate some dead money into next year. I'm sure they'll play a couple of post-June 1 games next year as well. But guys like Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Tyrann Mathieu, Taysom Hill, these are guys that, depending upon what their futures are in New Orleans, could potentially see some dead money accelerate into 2025 or 2026. And so I don't think that they're going to be completely free of the salary cap situation next year, but I do think that they're going to be in sort of their best salary cap situation for, you know, what we've seen from them in the recent past.
Nate just made a face when the name Taysom Hill came up. And I think we both had the same internal reaction, is reminding ourselves as fantasy drafts approach how for the 10th year in a row, Taysom Hill's presence in fantasy is going to be really annoying. But, hey, you can play him. Tight end? What should he be listed at this year, Ross? Tight end?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to be listed at tight end again. And I did ask Kellen Moore a couple weeks ago if he was still going to, once he's healthy and out on the field, if he was still going to see action, you know, from under center, whether that be as a rusher or as a passer. And I was given a very quick yes on that. So I think that he will be a tight end, it looks like, but I do think that he'll still continue to contribute for those fantasy owners from a different spot.
Sweet. I look forward to debates with everybody in October when we're yelling about what position he should be eligible for. Last thing for me, for you, Ross, the whole kind of outlook, well, maybe what fans want in New Orleans. Is there a push, especially given that Archie Manning was there, is there like a desire maybe to see the Saints bottom out this year and find themselves in a position to draft Arch Manning, if that's how it ends up playing out?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Typically, the fans that I talk to around the city and everything, when I, you know, run into folks and everything, it usually kind of comes down to them just sort of being patient and excited to see what could happen with Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler and like what could happen with this team this year, but not high expectations in terms of what that's going to end up looking like. And so I think that the expectations are pretty low, but I don't think that people are necessarily looking at this team as a team that needs to go out there and tank and kind of, you know, try to put themselves in position. And I think many of us still aren't necessarily sure if, you know, Archie Manning is actually coming out in 2026 either. And so I think that's another thing that's got to be sort of taken into consideration there by the team in that case, is you can't take for a guy when you don't even know if he's going to enter the league. You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of fans are kind of seeing it from that perspective as well, and just kind of want to see this team go out there and try to compete. They're excited about the new head coach. They're excited about the new defense. They're excited about the new quarterback situation. A lot of it is about the potential of the team, even though there's a lot of understanding that we might not see the full sort of realization of what the potential of what the New Orleans Saints are or could be in 2025.
And this leads me to my last one too for you, Ross, is like with Kellen Moore, like how much patience exists there both from the organization and from the fan base, knowing that it's probably his first 2 years that are going to, like, if they end up better than people think and are fighting for a wild card spot come week 16, week 17 or something like that, you know, short of that, if it is as bad of a year as I think a lot of the league is predicting, you know, like, how much patience will this franchise and fan base have for I would say an organization that has been maybe more patient with coaches than just about any. There hasn't been, it's not necessarily been a revolving door, but they also have tended to go with people they know, right? And have stayed sort of within the boundaries of who's been in their organization and guys that they trust, Dennis Allen and, you know, coming from that staff that Sean Payton was on, right? So, like, is there this, he's a young coach, he's got a bright future, like, he's kind of the guy for now, but we also expect him to be the guy for later, too.
Yeah, I think that there is going to be a pretty good amount of patience and leeway given here. You know, you got a guy that's coming in that just turned 37 years old on the 5th of this month, so just a few days ago. That's coming in to be the youngest head coach in the NFL in terms of active head coaches today, and is, you know, really kind of just inheriting somebody else's roster. Like, the Saints didn't make a ton of change in terms of, you know, moving on from some players and replacing them with new players. They made a lot of additions. But they didn't really change a whole bunch of what the roster is, like you usually see with the first-time head coach who comes in. Remember, like, Dan Quinn, you know, arrived in Washington last year, and Washington brought back one defensive starter. The Saints will have mostly their same defense outside of their starting corners and one starting safety going into 2025, the same as they had in 2024. And so I think that a lot of this is they flipped the coaching staff this year. I expect a lot of roster change in 2026, and then you're building momentum probably through 2026 and 2027. And so I think that people are looking at this as sort of a 2-3 year ramp up, and then they'll get the opportunity at that point as an organization to start to evaluate what they really have in Kellen Moore. And this is an organization that's been very patient to a fault, in my opinion, in some cases, held on to Pete Carmichael for far too long, held on to Dennis Allen for far too long. Like, this is something that this New Orleans Saints team has done, is be patient and be loyal. And sometimes they've done it to a fault, but I think in this situation, it's the right move when you have a young coach, and you know, I'm sure they're going to be looking to give him a little bit of a runway here to get something actually built for what he wants, as opposed to, you know, kind of inheriting what was left over.
Ross Jackson on the Wester Hotline, Locked On Saints TV down in New Orleans, Locked On NFL. You're a busy man, so appreciate you taking some time out. I'll have to text you on the side about some Devin Neal fantasy questions. I'm a sicko
absolutely,
like that.
Yeah, let's chat Devin Neal. I absolutely love it. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on. This is a blast.
Definitely. Thanks, Ross. Ross Jackson, Wester Hotline. How many games are they going to win this year after hearing all
three.
That? 3.
I mean, didn't they extend Alvin Kamara again?
That is because of, I think, the salary how we talked about. Like, they are in, what did he say? They're $50 million over the cap already?
A bad team.
For next year?
A team that's going to have 3 wins,
man,
having to roll over and have multiple June 1st designations.
Yeah.
I still can't believe Kellen Moore agreed to go there.
He might really. I know Ross said, like, fans are not necessarily all in, everybody, on this idea, but if I'm Kellen Moore, I'm thinking about Arch Manning.
Yeah.
I think, as Ross said, like, you don't know if he's going to come out. I think if it's the Saints at number one, I don't know what the guy thinks about his hometown. All I know is his grandpa played for the Saints.
Yep.
He's from New Orleans.
Yep.
He played high school football in New Orleans.
Yep.
So he, I think, lived there his whole life until he went to Texas.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't want to just assume everybody always wants to stay in their hometown forever, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And it would make sense that if the Saints are picking number one and he has the one big year at Texas, that he'll say, yeah, I'm coming out because I get to play for my hometown team. And they have a coach
that is
pretty
young,
good.
Progressive, offensive-minded, former quarterback. Yeah.
I think that's a match made in heaven. I think the Saints are going to be bad. I think he's from there. He's a hot prospect. The name power, the coach.
It's why you play Tyler Shuck right from the beginning. Because at the very worst, he is flashy and they win six games that they shouldn't have won. And you're like, this is a guy we might want to look to build around. Or he's so bad that you can convince everybody he's a rookie. We're going to get through these growing pains. We want to see what he has while also, you know, silently tanking.
Right. I think the biggest thing that I'm focusing more and more on quarterbacks is how do you do with pressure? How good are you at getting rid of the ball? How many sacks do you take?
Right.
What's the conversion rate on the amount of times you're pressured for how often you're taking sacks? And maybe I'm spoiled because we watched Josh Allen, who's like the best ever at avoiding sacks. Tyler Shuck, I think Ross maybe indicated this too, in college was a disaster in that area. He is like when the Bills play the Saints in week four, Greg Rousseau is going to have like a five sack day, and we're going to look back at his season and go, it's going to be, oh, he had 12 sacks. Five were against Tyler Shuck.
But I will say this, too.
That's going to happen.
It's also, I think, I agree with you that it's probably the most important like thing to look at young quarterbacks with because of how good C.J. Stroud was his rookie year. And what was the difference between rookie year and year two? Year one, he did a much better job than year two in sack avoidance. In year two, he got sacked a lot. The offensive line was bad.
Yep.
And they crumbled. They looked like a shell of themselves, and it cost Bobby Slowick his job.
Right. Caleb Williams, another quarterback that's got a
terrible.
He's got to get better. He's got to get better.
Well, they put together a heck of an offensive line and a coach that can probably put him in better positions.
I think he should get better at it because 68 sacks last year. 466 yards of sacks for Caleb Williams last year. And I think you're going to see a number like that for Shuck. Time out here. When we come back, Alex, if you hang on hold, you've been waiting patiently. We'll get to you right when we come back. Refire up the James Cook conversation from a little bit earlier. I've got some good Twitter answers on how many running backs in Bills history you think Cook is better than? Because some people have him, some people think of him, I think, a lot higher than I do. And I like James Cook. I like James Cook a lot. But I don't have him in any sort of like Mount Rushmore conversation for
of running backs?
For
no.
Bills running backs.
I guess I would agree with that, yeah.
803-0550 is the phone number. Jody Biasi, Nate Geary here on WGR.
I think very much that Spencer Rattler is the more ready prospect between the two. Obviously, Spencer has had a good six games of starting experience last year and everything, and he's, you know, seen more time in the NFL. And if I'm going to throw a guy to the NFL wolves, if you will, I want him to at least have seen the game before. But even though he's, in my opinion, the better option right now, I think the Saints are going to go to Tyler Shuck pretty soon. I've been pretty convinced that Tyler Shuck is going to be their week one starter and that they're going to give him the opportunity. The question is how long of a leash will he have and how long are they going to be willing to be patient?
Ross Jackson, our guest from last segment on the Saints, the Bills week four opponent. If you missed that, you can find that on demand. WGR550.com. Tyler Shuck, who all the people that make the little headlines for First Take on ESPN are going to have a field day with all the potential puns with Shuck.
Shuck in the sand.
Even though if you don't...
yeah.
Let's take a call.
I could be their cry... What is it? What are they called? The Cryons?
Is that what they're called? Like the people who write... Wait.
Chiron?
Is that what they call...
I don't know.
They call the tickers at the bottom? It's like C.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. This would be a great time to have Jeremy here.
Because
Jeremy would know what it is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I think you got to be over 34 years old to know.
And does Owen, do you know what these are? I don't know.
Because
we don't really have them on our YouTube stream.
The like headlines at the bottom, right? Like, you know, when they got wearing in the news, it's like.
The ticker?
Yeah, like but it's score. Called like a.
It's called something.
Crawler?
Crying. It's like
crawler?
No. It's like Chyron or something.
I should probably know.
You
that,
should
and I don't.
If anyone.
Chyron. Chyron.
I knew I was close.
Look at I've never
whether that's how you say it, I don't know.
Professionals over here.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
We're radio.
Watching.
Yeah, right.
You can watch us on YouTube though now, of course. And I did the chat had it. The chat did have it. Sebastian had it in the chat. So.
Yeah.
He got it first, I think.
That's right.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Alex has been waiting very patiently on a Sabres thought. What's up, Alex?
Hey, boys. Thanks for having me on. No trouble waiting.
Sure.
I'm going to take a page out of Nate's book today and actually skip the Sabres talk because it's a nice day.
Okay.
Why ruin it?
The only thing I'll say, which I think is important context when we talk about the Sabres, is that according to ChatGPT, average cap space in the NHL right now is $8 million. I think median cap space is around $12 million. So I just think that's important context, not to defend the Sabres and Kevin Adams.
Okay.
But something to note. Stick to the Bills. First on Kincaid, second on Curtis Samuel in the receiver room more generally. With Kincaid, I think there's a conversation that he just didn't get enough targets or enough usage, and that's part of the conversation there. But to me, I've been saying this for a long time, Joe. I think you touched on it this week. He just lacks the physical traits of the top tight ends in this league. He's not strong. He's not overly fast. He's not powerful at all. And I just think the eye test is, like, he can be a serviceable player in this league, but if we're ever expecting him to develop into one of those top tight ends, I just don't think it's going to happen. I think him sitting out of the combine really helped him. I think if he tested, he probably wouldn't have been a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. And then next, I see a lot of chatter from the media on Curtis Samuel and how he might be on the bubble, a cut candidate, and I don't see that at all. I think he really, really came on strong last year, specifically in the playoffs. He serves a really important role on this team. And people have brought up that Elijah Moore might make him more expendable. To me, that's not the case. I think, you know, if anything, this team needs more guys that could beat man coverage. And at the end of the season, on third down, they looked to Curtis Samuel a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So those are my 2 points.
Take
it where you will. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alex, for the call. Samuel, they do have to, I think, create a little bit more cap room, but really they don't do that by removing Samuel from the roster. There's not a cap. $430,000 is what they save by releasing
him. Yeah, he's...
It's basically the same. So... And then you would actually spend more than $430,000 on a rookie contract for his replacement by a couple hundred thousand. So it doesn't really matter.
He would have to have a disastrous camp, and then someone else would have to be like.
And I don't see that happen. I think he could get injured again.
I think their top five is locked. I think their top five is locked.
I'm pretty much in agreement with you.
And
it would be very hard for me to see anybody, Shavers or anybody else, crack. Removing anybody out of that top five.
I don't think Elijah Moore is here to compete with Curtis Samuel. I think he's here to potentially compete with Josh Palmer.
Or be depth for Palmer and Coleman, right? Just another guy that could play on the outside regularly.
There's a real argument to be made he's your second best receiver.
Well, because, right, Samuel, he can beat man coverage. He did that against the Broncos last year on that long touchdown play where he scores after, but... There are plays with Samuel behind the line of scrimmage and using him in motion and using him in ways that you use Shakir.
I think they'll use him more in those instances this year than they did last year. I do think that the turf toe injury really affected him probably for the first 8 to 12 games.
Yeah, so I don't think there is any part of me that thinks he's on the bubble.
Agreed.
He did get used more in the playoffs. I would expect him to be on the roster and him to be used somewhat. Kincaid, I am more and more thinking about him being a Zach Ertz-like tight end. I don't see the physical traits that would make him anything more than that. And that, by the way, is not to say that that's not a productive player. Ertz, you can argue how good he actually was, or he's just a volume guy. But he had 100 targets for Philadelphia 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
And had the one big year with 116 catches for 1,100 yards. And again, like, I would have never considered him one of the best tight ends in football, because what's the reputation of Zach Ertz? He'll catch a 6-yard pass and fall down, right?
Yeah.
There's literally a Twitter account of, did Zach Ertz break a tackle today? And the answer in the tweet is always, no, he did not. So he doesn't give you that. And I think Kincaid does give you more of that with the ball in his hands. Like, I think he can create some. But, right, like... He's not particularly fast.
No.
I think at his Utah Pro Day, he ran like a 4.6. So I don't have this elite speed. He, size-wise, like, height, all right, he's fine. He's not Darren Waller, though. He's not 6'7". And we know he's not built
like a George Kittle type guy, because what did the Bills say at the end of the season? They wanted him to put on more bulk, more muscle. And that's for, you know, lasting through the year. So what do I have in Kincaid?
Just described Kyle Pitts with better PR.
Maybe. But Pitts even has that elite, is supposed to have that elite speed for a tight end that's almost like a wide receiver.
Yeah.
For Kincaid, I feel like what he's going to settle into as a top, if he's going to be a top tight end in the league, is it's going to be in the route running, the nuances of the position. He sits down in soft zones, and him and Allen are just symbiotic on that, like that type of play, more than, oh, I've got Kincaid matched up on a linebacker, I got to exploit that one-on-one down the field. I don't think that's Dalton Kincaid.
Well, let me ask you this. What's his best case scenario this year in terms of pecking order? Is it second?
Well, best case is he's first.
I don't think that's bad. I don't think
you don't
he's
think
first.
Possible?
I don't think he'll ever be first with Khalil Shakir on the team.
Shakir,
I think Shakir is your number one guy.
Ooh, I don't like. I would bet Shakir is their leading receiver, but 76 catches for 821 yards and 4 touchdowns. I think Kincaid can top that. That's Shakir last year. You don't think Kincaid can top that? I think that's gettable. Unless you think Shakir is going to elevate from those numbers.
I do think Shakir elevates from the numbers. Because I think he showed more towards the end of the season, and they showed that he was kind of their best deep threat, too. It wasn't just the guy they were throwing screen passes to. He started to stretch the field.
There was a little of that. He had a play against
the Rams game.
He had a play like that against the Ravens.
And the Rams.
On the opening drive, there was a Rams play, the wheel route down the sideline. So there was a little of that. But I think Kincaid could be a player where, this is where I don't think he's ever going to be an elite tight end. Because the elite tight ends, they could put up 1,000-yard seasons every year.
Yeah.
I think Kincaid will have one or two. I think he'll get to 1,000 in his career. But I would not expect him to do it regularly.
Would you say, though, that if he was going to get 1,000 yards, this would probably have to be the season if he's going to do it in Buffalo?
I don't know. Like, that's where I'm willing to be patient with him on that, because I do think the typical route for tight ends is they do take a little bit of time. And there are a lot of examples of players that even in their third year don't really pop off.
Yeah.
And then they kind of figure it out after the fact. Guys that went in the first round. I'm thinking of Evan Engram for this. Evan Engram, actually, if you look at his career, I'm looking right now, it was like his sixth year before he finally popped.
Yeah.
When he got to Jacksonville. Is Eric Ebron another good example of this? Like, first-round pick that kind of started a little slow?
Those guys were also with bad quarterback play.
I mean,
and then got to good quarterback play, and then he looked better when he finally had a good quarterback.
Ebron had Stafford. I mean, that's not, like, the worst.
Yeah.
It was his fifth year where he finally went for 110 targets, 750 yards, and 13 touchdowns.
Was that in Pittsburgh?
That was in Indy. With 2018 Indy. Is that Andrew Luck?
That's Andrew Luck.
Maybe the last year of Andrew Luck, or one of the last years. So, like, sure, I'd like to see it this year from Kincaid, because every year that passes, you would think it's less and less likely that he'll ever turn into that dominant tight end.
Yeah,
I would tell you right now, I'm already writing him off for ever being a dominant tight end. I think he could be a really good one for a long time, but I guess I would be surprised without the elite speed, without the elite size, if he ever becomes like first-team All-Pro, Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Trey McBride level. Like, this is one of the best three tight ends in football. My bet would be he's always just a little bit below that, which could be fine, by the way. Like, you would pay that guy. I think if he's the sixth best tight end in football for the next 10 years, you would give that guy an extension.
I think so.
I would.
I would think I'd like to see them use him in the screen game less.
I definitely agree with that. There's a lot of him in the screen game.
Or if not, just not the slip screen
a lot more
game or the bubble screen game. Like, if you want to get him the ball like the Chiefs get Kelce the ball with those like mid screens behind offensive linemen, where it's not like I have to break a tackle, but instead I've got lead blockers, them using him like Shakir is sometimes very weird to me.
803-0550 if you want to get a quick call. And we've got Ed McGrogan coming up from the Tennis Channel at 9 o'clock. Talk some Wimbledon. He's also a huge Bills fan, so we'll get his thoughts on training camp and the upcoming season. When we come back, the new quarterback season is out on Netflix, and Kirk Cousins had a little bit of a revealing comment about his time in Atlanta, which, by the way, is still ongoing. He's still a Falcon, even though he doesn't want to be.
A little of that when we come back here on WGR. You watching the, or are you going to watch the quarterback documentary? New season? Kirk Cousins?
No.
Joe Burrow, Jared Goff?
Nah.
All right. Well,
I've started to sour on Joe Burrow a little.
On Joe Burrow?
Yeah. Like, I feel like he's an unbelievable player.
He's cool, the fourth.
I don't think he's that cool.
He drives a Batmobile.
I don't think he's that cool.
Well, the key to being cool is that you're not trying to be cool.
And I feel like he tries to be cool.
He's trying to be cool?
Yeah.
Also, yeah, I think I understand that a little bit. I still think he's pretty darn cool, but his nickname is Joe Cool.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know.
Well, anyways, if you're not watching it, some of the clips, of course, and comments are going to make it out anyway. Kirk Cousins revealed on the documentary, quote, "If I had the that information around free agency, them drafting Michael Penix, it would have affected my decision. I had no reason to leave Minnesota with how much we loved it there if both teams were going to be drafting a quarterback high." So, like, not even just I would have gone somewhere else where I could have started. It's
you
made me leave my home in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And if it was the same situation, I just would have stayed there.
Yeah.
So, Atlanta.
Hindsight's easy for him to do now, though.
That's true, but
neither of them really wanted each other anymore in Minnesota.
That's probably right. Maybe Minnesota would have brought him back the way they had Darnold. I mean, he would have started last year if McCarthy gets hurt, and he would have had a big year.
Yeah.
He was coming off torn Achilles. Maybe he wouldn't have had a big year, but he could have. Now, though, for him, you know, this kind of it's making me think of our Sabres conversation from earlier, how at the first instance of you might want out, the Sabres get rid of you.
Yeah.
Atlanta, this guy badly wants out.
Yeah.
He
thinks he can still
start. With the owner. He wants to play somewhere. He wants to be traded. And Atlanta's like,
nah.
No, you're ours. You're going to be our backup quarterback.
Yeah, we're paying you.
Yeah. You're not going anywhere. And listen, that's tough on the player.
Yeah.
Especially in this instance because in hockey, everybody gets playing time. In this, Cousins might never play again on that contract if they just want to hold him as the backup.
Right.
But he's a Falcon. And as badly as he might want, he wanted to go to the Giants, right?
Yeah.
Because they had an opening. As badly as he might want out, Atlanta's just like not letting him. He is stuck there.
Maybe it changes next year, but is he 40 then?
Kirk Cousins, he is 36 right now.
Okay.
He'll be 37 at the start of the season.
He could start somewhere next year.
His age 38 season.
He could start somewhere next year.
It'd be
Probably tough, Pittsburgh.
I mean, they'd be getting four years younger at the position.
Right.
Pittsburgh. They're just going to go round and round, aren't they?
Yep.
They're the new Colts. The Colts had like a different starting quarterback every year for 6 years. That's the Steelers now.
100%.
Because they're going to have a different next year, right?
Yep.
Different starter. Kirk Cousins, he is good on these documentaries, though, I've seen. But one last thing on this. It's less for me, it's Joe Burrow, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins. You know, I'm not interested in the players. It's more, there's such an oversaturation of sports documentaries right now.
Yeah.
That I don't know how much bandwidth I have for, there's an F1 documentary and a golf documentary and Hard Knocks is coming. I got to save my bandwidth for Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be watching that because the Bills are featured. So I don't have room to pick up another football documentary right now.
Don't have room for you.
Maybe I'll watch a little of it, see if it's good. But
yeah, Hard Knocks coming up. This is going to be the first year I'm going to really actually be invested in it.
Right. You'll watch every second?
Yeah.
I'll watch every second. Yeah. Time out
probably
here.
Twice.
When we come back, Ed McGrogan from Tennis Channel, big Bills fan. He's got some thoughts on the Bills. Also, Wimbledon, the storylines that are happening even as we speak right now. Sabalenka, the number one player on the women's side, is down 3-0 in games. And I believe that is live in the quarterfinals. So we'll talk to Ed about that side of the bracket and the men's side of the bracket and the Bills when we come back here on WGR.